Hello, photography lovers, and welcome to another episode of the Fashion Photography Podcast with me, Virginia. As I promised you last week, we are here with a brand new guest. And this time, we talk about small markets and what are the pros and cons about it. The influencers and their influence on the fashion photography market. Why they have such a big impact. And what's the future going to be like? We talk a lot about YouTube, of course, for obvious reasons. Because my guest today is a very gorgeous YouTuber that is bringing tons of new information on a weekly basis. So guys, I cannot wait to show you more of the podcast today because I'm really excited. But before that, I want to say big thank you for all your amazing responses connected to the International Podcasting Day on the Facebook group called Fashion Photography Lovers. If you guys are not part of it yet, definitely look for it on Facebook because it's full of amazing people and I cannot wait to see your work there. And now it's time for a podcast.
Hello, everybody. My name is Anita Sadowska and I'm a fashion and beauty photographer. I was originally born in Poland, but I was raised in Ireland and currently I'm traveling around the world and at the moment I'm in Lisbon.
I bet that many people at the moment are responding to your name, thinking about your YouTube channel.
Yes, for sure. It's been a wild journey. I didn't expect it to go the way it did. I'm the most awkward, camera shy person you can ever know in your life. And just being in front of the camera and doing what I do is kind of a shocker.
Okay, let's try to kind of arrange this timeline. Mm-hmm. So tell me when you started with photography and tell me when you started with your YouTube channel and if you have some education background in photography.
I started photography, I think, back in 2008, if I remember well. I was around 16. My parents literally just bought me a camera. I really wanted one. I was bugging them forever. It was after my, I think, junior cert exams, which is like the mid-second grade school exams. And they bought it for me as a present. And I started taking photos of everything, of trees and people and who knows what. And then I slowly progressed into taking photos a bit more seriously. I was doing more and more throughout my school years. And then by the time I was graduating school, I was really serious about it. At the time, I had the plan to go to school to study architecture. But it was kind of between studying photography and architecture. But I realized that I hate buildings and I'm shitty at drawing. So it wasn't maybe the best choice.
Yeah, sounds like a difficult decision.
Yeah, I just think at the time, a lot of people were telling me that you shouldn't be doing photography, like you won't be able to survive on photography. It's not really a real job. It's going to be very hard. So many people do it and all this kind of stuff. So I was kind of discouraged by my teachers, I guess, in a way. Just that they were trying to make sure that I get like a real 9-to-5. But I'm a very stubborn person. And then I decided to go and study photography. So I moved cities. I moved from Cork to Dublin, which is around 3 hours away. And I studied photography for around 2 years. I hated every single minute of it. It was the longest 2 years of my life. And I was kind of at the point where I was making money already with photography. And it was a situation where I would either stop doing photography and just do my college course and finish it. And it was 4 years. Or I would stop my college and just do my photography. And I decided that since I was making money with it already, and since it's such a creative thing, and the college itself, it just wasn't really providing me with skills that I needed to take photos. It was just teaching me the theory part of it, talking about Marxism and socialism, and I had to write a lot of essays, and I just didn't really like that because I've never really been enjoying writing. So I decided to quit in third year, at the beginning of third year, and I just did photography, and I don't regret it one bit.
I get the part about writing especially because it's also not my favorite part. But I think that this theory education was actually very useful for you because now you're very good at explaining things.
I am very hesitant of giving any credit to my college because, to be honest, I've always been better with languages and with writing than I ever was with, let's say, maths or physics or anything like that. So I don't think going to college was necessarily what made me go into education per se. I learned a lot through my YouTube channel and through listening to what people had to say, because a lot of people always have suggestions at the end of their videos. Mm-hmm. They ask you to do certain things or to not do certain things. And I think it's just about how you can progress with it. But I'm still learning how to explain stuff to people and how to be a bit more vocal. When I started out, I remember I was in college and I was doing some photography. I was getting published and so on. And I remember now a friend of mine asked me, he was in college for videography or something, and he had to do an interview with somebody in the fashion industry, and he Googled female fashion photographers, and I was the first in Google, so he asked me to do it, and I was like, sure, you know, no problem. And I remember that interview that I did, I actually watched it recently with my boyfriend, and basically it was just such a stressful experience. I was shaking.
Oh,
my voice was shaking. I looked like a beaten dog. I was terrified. I was so scared. And it's just, you know, even looking back at my first YouTube videos, I was this terrified little girl. And I put myself in front of the camera. But it was, I was so camera shy, and I was so awkward. And I hated being in front of the camera. And I think now, you know, after doing it for such a long time, for the last 2 or 3 years, I'm just so used to it. So
I can confirm that. There is quite a lot of difference between your very first video.
Oh, for sure.
And it's true. You look terrified at the beginning.
I was.
Yeah, I remember watching your videos and I was like, well, she's shooting perfectly fine. What's wrong with her? Why is she so worried?
Yeah.
And I was just looking at your images and I was like, okay, probably she's worried because of the camera in front of her and not the one that she's shooting with.
Mm.
But now there is a tremendous difference. And I love that because we're all learning. You should hear me through the very first interviews that I did. First off, I need to tell you that we delayed the first episode of the podcast a whole year because I hated my voice. And the very first interviews, I'm just so worried that I barely speak.
Yeah.
Which is very hard to like sustain a real interview without talking.
Yeah, for sure.
So yeah, I totally get it. You have your audience and you know that this is one of the biggest topics that everyone in the industry is very excited about. How you get your very first clients?
Let me start with saying Ireland is not a very good industry when it comes to fashion. There's a very limited fashion resource. There's a very limited amount of designers. And it's a very hard industry to get through. But at the same time, because Ireland is a country so small, once you make it, everybody knows about you. So it's kind of like a two-sided coin. It has its positives and it has its negatives. Because once you make it, it's great, but there isn't really much to make. So that's the problem. But regardless, when I first started, I was just doing shoots for fun. Quite a lot of them. And then eventually me and my stylist and my team, I created a little team of people that I was working with. We all kind of started at the same time and we started trying to get published in local magazines. So we would get published in mostly it was like those newspaper inserts that you get. So like, let's say you would have Irish Times magazine or Irish Times newspaper. And each Sunday there will be Irish Times magazine coming out with it. And usually the editors needed some sort of a fashion editorial. And if you were using local designers especially, they would be very welcome to that because they obviously wanted to promote Irish fashion. That to be said, those things didn't pay at all or they paid so little that it was just ridiculous. I mean, they might have as well not paid. But at the time, because we were doing it pre-social media and pre-Instagram boom, it was like the best way to promote the designers. And a lot of designers that would be reading those newspapers would then look at your work. And my very first client was a vegan leather bag designer. And that was, I think, back in 2013. That was my first shoot. It was in a studio. I had very little experience in the studio, so it was definitely very stressful. But I remember at that time, I shot for the first time with a makeup artist that I've been working with for several years since then. It was our first shoot together. I just remember when I walked in, he's very quiet and he doesn't really talk a lot. And I thought that he hated me and that he thought I was way below him. I confronted him a few times about it. I was like, Roy, did you actually hate me the first shoot? He's like, what are you talking about? But yeah, that was my start. That was my very first time doing a campaign for a designer and yeah, shooting the bags. It was a lot of fun. I was really, really excited about it.
I know it's been like about 10 years, but I don't think that many things have changed during this period because now, yeah, most of the people won't see your name in the magazine and decide that they want to work with you. They're going to go to Instagram, interact with you, like send you a DM or something like that and see if you're the right fit. So nowadays, it's not very different because they're still going to observe your work first and then connect with you. It's not going to be through a paper magazine, but...
It's a bit different though in Ireland. Obviously, each country is different, but I feel like in Ireland, the industry, and this is why one of the reasons why I started YouTube in the first place, the industry is quite closed off and the industry is very sheltered and they're not very welcoming to outsiders. In Ireland, for example, the stylists hold all the power because they are the ones in with the PR agency, with the clients. They are usually the ones that decide on photographers. So unless you are in with one of the big stylists, you won't really get any jobs. There's rarely any clients contacting you about jobs. It's usually the stylists. So unless you're in with them, unless they like your work, and unless, you know, you're friends with them, it's a very, very hard to find the jobs. And that's what I struggled with for years because, you know, a lot of people that work in the industry, they're either Irish born or they've been in the country for many, many, many years where they've been raised with those people. And because the industry is so small, it's all about being friends with somebody. And it was kind of to a point where I've done my work and I've done it for so many years and I've never really felt properly accepted into the industry in a way, especially because I wasn't raised in Dublin. I was raised in Cork, which is even worse because it's kind of in the middle of nowhere. It's a smaller city. So I struggled with that a lot. And that's why I think the magazines for me were the only way to get through to the designers because I had a Polish surname and I didn't know anybody from school. And it was a rough start. And I think that's one of the reasons why I set up my YouTube channel because I just couldn't get through in the industry. And I was getting jobs and I was getting paid, but it just was never really what I wanted fully, like the clients that I wanted and so on. They would never work with me. And eventually I was just like, I just need to do something different because I feel like if I keep doing what I do now, I was just getting more and more frustrated with my work and with the lack of progress and with the lack of like better clients, let's say. And I was just kind of starting to hate it because it was more as a something that I had to do to pay bills rather than being excited about it and doing something fun. Maybe in this sense, it is much different now because in Ireland at the moment, I haven't been there for almost a year now, but all the magazines are just dying like flies. Everything is shutting down. And I think the fashion industry is really, really struggling right now. So I can't say I'm very sorry that I left when I did. And I feel for a very long time when I was going to travel and I told my parents about it. My dad was like, oh, you're going to lose all your clients. You're not going to have any money and all this stuff. And of course, it was a big concern. But at the same time, I just kind of felt that I was never really going to be happy where I was. And who cares? Let's do it. That'll be fine.
There are many things that came to my mind when I was listening to you. For example, I think it's always the same in the small cities. For example, I've been born in Sofia, Bulgaria. And for those of you that don't know where Bulgaria is, you're not the only one. It's right above Greece. I don't know why everyone knows where Greece is, but not Bulgaria. Like they're attached to each other. Anyways, Sofia is a small city and it's exactly the same. You need to know the right stylist in order to have work. It's a very easy to succeed very fast in a small country. At the same time, I also do agree with you. The fashion industry is really struggling. I'm not quite sure if it's only struggling in small countries, though.
I think the whole industry shift to influencers is a big part of it because nowadays Instagram and social media hold so much power that it's just not viable for clients to take photos as campaigns anymore because they just don't make them any money. You know, think about it this way. If you had a budget of, let's say, I don't know, $3,000 and you could spend it on paying a photographer or paying an influencer who has a genuine following that is going to buy her products, who would you choose? It's a pretty simple choice. And I feel like it is going to get bigger and bigger. And as much as people don't like it, the truth is influencers are taking away people's jobs. And for the right reason, because they do sell and they do have a genuine following and genuine voice where people want to buy their products. I've worked with a bunch of influencers throughout my years, especially in Ireland, all the bigger Irish influencers, and I've seen stats of how much they're selling. And to be honest, looking at that, I can absolutely understand why people or designers or whoever brands pay them instead of doing campaigns and photo shoots and so on.
Yeah.
It just doesn't make any sense anymore to pay photographers instead of paying influencers, unfortunately.
Well, it is the truth. And that's why, I don't know if it was several months ago when I got asked by a photographer how they can explain to the client that it's not beneficial for them to work with influencers because they are not experienced with posing. And I really did my best to help this photographer to understand that actually this is the best for their client.
Mm-hmm.
Because in many cases, the influencers definitely know how to pose because they have experience by themselves retouching those images. Mm. And they do know what to do. And secondly, it's just going to lead to more sales, which at the end of the day is the most important part for the client.
Exactly. And I feel like a lot of the influencers are actually really good photographers themselves, or yeah, they have boyfriends or husbands who do photography for them. And a lot of them are actually creating way better content than some photographers would, you know, and it's frustrating for photographers and it is soul crushing. But at the same time, unfortunately, that's the world that we're living in today. Everybody has access to photography. Everybody has access to cameras because you can take beautiful photos on your phone. So here is where you just have to find, I guess, your voice and your market to do your work, or otherwise there's so much competition out there that it's so hard nowadays.
They do have a different eye towards the world because they want to show to everyone what mm-hmm. they're doing.
There is time and place for everybody. I feel like the problem is the influencers have taken a big chunk of photographers' work by doing the work themselves. There's always going to be time and place for photography. You know, you still have bigger shops, and even if they shoot with influencers, they use professional photographers to do it. And there's always going to be brands that are going to be depending on your content. But I think even if you look at Instagram now and the way a lot of brands work, especially swimwear brands, I've been submerged in the swimwear industry for quite a bit because I've been living in Bali. First thing first, everybody can have a brand. So basically anybody with any following or any kind of money can basically just go and design their own brand and like to say Bali or somewhere. And it costs cents. It costs maybe like $1 to $2 per swimsuit, and they sell it for $60-$70 mm-hmm. per piece.
That's the truth.
Yeah. And a lot of the brands work on purely, they share photos on Instagram of people that tag them in the photos. So for example, there's a bunch of swimwear brands that I follow that would just repost photos from other people. They still shoot their own campaigns on top of that. They still do maybe 3 or 4 shoots throughout the year. But majority of the time, they have free, unlimited amount of content just from people wearing their clothes. And this is another tricky thing because everybody wants to get in and everybody wants to be an influencer. You have all those girls and all the people submitting their photos to those brands. While, you know, back in the day, maybe 10 years ago, when there wasn't really such thing as Instagram, everybody had to produce their own content and they had to take the photos and they had to just hire photographers and hire other creatives. Well, now it's just that there's no need for it because they just repost everybody's photos and they just put the little shop tag on it and they sell. And that's what it is.
It's true. Yeah. But at the same time, as you said, everyone can become an influencer. So there are very different ways for that. And I know many photographers that are dealing very good with their social media. And at the same time, they do have clients. And I think this is very beneficial for them because if you are the person with a huge following
mm-hmm.
and at the same time, you're the photographer, you can get both the salary from the photo shoot and at the same time, the client coming to you because of your followers and because of your skills.
Yeah.
So I think this is really great. I mean, many people are looking at the industry and the changes in it as something very bad. I think it's very interesting.
It's definitely a twist. I think you just have to keep adjusting your business model and keep changing with the business, because back in the day when the likes of Annie Leibovitz, when she was starting, I think in the 60s, if I'm correct, it's only been 40, 50 years and analog photography is pretty much dead now. So you just have to look at it in a way that you have to keep progressing with the business and see where it takes you. Because the chance is there could be maybe video replacing photography in a few years, because there is more and more moving image. So it's just something that you have to keep in mind, that with the creative medium, you always have to keep progressing and keep going with the times, because it's advancing so fast and there's so much happening that you just have to be flexible enough. And if you're not, you're just going to get left behind. And that's the reality.
Absolutely. So talking about moving images and the interview that you mentioned that you did and you were super stressed about, when was the moment you decided you want your own channel? And what was the biggest difficulty for you back then?
I started my YouTube channel because I was sick of not having a voice. I was sick of doing all the work, feeling very passionate about it, but then not having this outlet. Because out of my own experience, when I was running just Instagram, when I just started, a lot of the time, the followers that you get on Instagram are not very genuine. They're just people that follow you and unfollow you, or, you know, they follow you because they hope that you will follow them back or comment. But it's, in general, it's not really people that care about your work. And there isn't really many people that care about your work. And I wanted this space where I could do something fun, my own projects, and justify it not being paid for it. Because a lot of the time when I was doing my own tests, people would be like, why are you doing this? This is like free work. You're not getting anything out of it. And this is one of the things that I guess always frustrated me, where people don't see the benefits of testing and they just want to get paid. And at the end of the day, I feel like if you're an artist and if you really do something because you love it, of course you should get paid for it. But at the same time, I feel like there needs to be space for you to just do your own stuff and just explore and get better at what you're doing. Because if I didn't do tests and if I didn't do those YouTube videos, I just don't think I would have been anywhere with my portfolio. Because the majority of the time, if I post my photos, the best work is usually my own personal work and not the client work, because I have the most creative freedom and I can do whatever I want, basically. But going back to YouTube, I think at the time I set up my YouTube channel because I knew that it was going to be a good way to promote myself, to maybe show behind the scenes of my videos. I did enjoy doing video. I did a bunch of model tests at the very beginning when I was too shy to speak. I just did like little model videos that were maybe a minute or 2 minutes.
And you were narrating, yeah.
No, actually, I wasn't even narrating. I think I either removed the videos or maybe made them private. But it was just basically just a moving image of the model. It was kind of like a tiny little clip, maybe like a minute long, of models just dancing around the studio and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So it was just like a fun thing to do, something that I wasn't photography. It was just something that I spent a few hours of my life doing, and I thought that it was fun. And then eventually I was looking at some channels, and then I was like, oh, maybe I should give it a go. And I remember the first one that I properly posted was my Photoshop tutorial that I did of this photo shoot that I did as a test. It was like a snowy photo shoot. We got a snow machine in the set. We had two huskies that peed all over the background. But it was a really fun shoot, and I loved seeing that image, and I just posted it, and I started getting views, and then I was like, oh, that's interesting. And I started getting a bit of traction on my social media and so on, and I was like, oh, okay, that's pretty interesting. And then I kept posting, and people kept slowly coming in. It was a very slow process because I found it very difficult, I guess, to first talk a lot because, as I said, I was extremely, extremely camera shy, so it was very hard for me to just stand up under the camera and talk about stuff. And because it was more like a music video format than being super informative, my videos didn't get as much traction as I would like to. But then eventually I kind of got a bit more outgoing and I spoke a bit more and I got a bit better at maybe expressing myself. And then the views kind of slowly started rolling in, and I started building this kind of small community that slowly bled into my Instagram as well. And now I'm here.
Now you're here and you have more than 100K followers, which is so amazing. You have a whole community behind you.
Yes.
I think it's a great safety net and support system. Am I right?
Oh, absolutely. I have so many friends that I made through my followers. And there's people that I talk to almost on a daily basis that know a lot about me, even though I would, like, a lot of the time I don't even actually know them in real life. Funny story, when I was in Bali last year, I had to do a visa run and I was going to Australia for the first time. And I had one of my followers, his name was Alex. He lives in Perth where I was going. He was like, oh, if you ever come to Perth, you can stay at my place, no problem. And I feel like I'm a good judge of character. So I was like, oh, Alex, you know what? I'm coming to Perth. Is there any chance I could just stay with you? And I just flew for a week, stayed at a guy's house that I didn't know. He could have been an axe killer. Thankfully, he wasn't. Love Alex to death. He's great.
Shout out to Alex, who is not
a
serial killer.
Yeah, so I stayed with him for a week and it was great. And then he came to visit Bali later that year. So you really get to meet friends and you really get to kind of have your own little community of people that support you. And they're really rooting for you and can see that they really care about you and your life. And it's really nice.
Yeah, I definitely relate to that. It's so amazing to have a community around you. And this was actually the whole idea behind the podcast, to just gather people with positive minds. And this is something very important for us in the Facebook group, mm-hmm. because we really, truly believe that if you're a good person, you will be surrounded by good people. Talking about your YouTube channel, it's also very mm-hmm. important to have someone to take the video footage.
Yes.
Tell me more about it.
This is something that is always very interesting. It depends. When I first started shooting, I would mostly do behind the scenes myself. Mm-hmm. Then I was depending on my long-term partner to take my video. He was a videographer, so it was pretty handy. Nowadays, it's a mix. Sometimes I get to bribe my boyfriend to help me film, which I'm very grateful for because he's great. And he helps me a lot and it takes a lot of pressure off me. Or sometimes, you know, I have a lot of people that keep asking me because of YouTube channel. They're like, oh, I just want to come and assist you and see how it works. So usually I just ask them and I'm like, listen, is there any chance you could help me film the behind the scenes? And then they usually come in and I pay for their travel and food and so on. Because as I said, usually the projects that I do are just my own projects. So I'm usually not able to pay people otherwise. Usually if I work with people, there's certain assistants that I've had throughout the years that I know and trust. And I know that they will take very good behind the scenes for me. If I work with people that I don't really know, I usually just get them to get the most basic shots, let's say of me talking and so on. I have a microphone that is a wireless microphone, so I have it on the camera and on me. So I usually ask them to take longer bits of footage that I can use for just me directing the models and so on. And then I usually just grab the camera of them at certain points and I just get a certain amount of B-roll myself. So I just take videos of the model, let's say, moving around and maybe close-ups of her face and so on, because even in a case where the behind the scenes is really bad, a B-roll usually saves the day. So if I know mm-hmm. I have this certain amount of decent behind the scenes like B-roll, then I know that the behind the scenes will be fine.
Have you ever been let down by the videographer?
Many times, yeah. But it's just part of the risk when you have to depend, when you don't have a steady person that does the filming for you. But as I said, a lot of the time, I just learned to just work on it in a way where I just take the B-roll and then at least I know that even if the footage is, I don't know, really shaky or if there isn't enough of it, at least maybe I can do a voiceover and I can have the B-roll to just fill up the gaps whenever I need to. You know, there has been a few situations where the behind the scenes would be just so minimalist or so bad that I would just scrap the shoot and that's it. Or like not scrap the shoot, just scrap the behind the scenes because mm-hmm. there was no point in showing it. But you know what happens? It's just something that you have to deal with. Obviously, nowadays, because I'm mainly concentrating on YouTube, I obviously make sure that stuff like that doesn't happen. And I have maybe a few people that I work with that I know that I can depend on and that I know that are good at what they're doing. I think at the moment, the biggest letdown in my videos is myself because I don't explain stuff enough when I'm on the shoot, because I still struggle with this notion of having to speak out everything I do on a photo shoot. So I need to kind of sit down and maybe plan what I'm going to talk about a bit better before the shoot. And then as the shoot starts, I can be a bit more vocal and explain a bit more step by step. Why am I doing things a certain way? Why am I using this light? Why am I shooting at this time of the day and not the other? And this kind of stuff. Because I feel like at the moment, the biggest letdown was not the visuals. It's just the lack of me speaking and having to do a voiceover afterwards.
I don't agree with you, to be honest. I mean, I really like it when you have a voiceover afterwards. Mm-hmm. It looks like you're thinking about the process. I can definitely see if you're saying something during the video that obviously that's important. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, when you have the narrating part, I feel like I'm already there. I think there is a lot of psychological part in it because mm-hmm. I know it's going to sound funny, but it sounds like I'm in your head.
Yeah.
I can hear your thoughts and I really like that.
Ideally, I would like to have a mix of both. I would like to have a good mix of talking on the day of the shoot because, like, you know, I think the problem is when I'm there on the day of the shoot, whatever I'm thinking and I'm speaking out loud is what is actually happening in my head. If I do the voiceover afterwards, sometimes I do a voiceover maybe 3 or 4 months after the shoot was done. Mm-hmm. I actually have no idea what I was thinking that day because I can barely remember what I ate for breakfast last week. So I feel like this is the problem where I can't be as frank and as honest, especially if I do, for example, camera reviews or lens reviews. I forget the thoughts that I had on the day. And that's why I'm just kind of saying that I should be doing more of a speaking out loud kind of thing. But as I said, I'm getting better and better with it. I'm just trying to just keep reminding myself to keep doing it and keep speaking out a bit more. And I'm very grateful. My boyfriend always just pokes me and he's like, so what are you doing now? Use your voice. I'm like, oh, okay. Let me say what I'm doing right now.
Oh, that's really cool. It's always very important to have someone to remind you of those little things.
Of course. Yeah. It's very easy to forget it when you're in the middle of a shoot and you're trying to plan your images in your head. And then at the same time, you have to speak out everything. And then there's this element of usually working with teams. If you work with your usual team of people that know you, it's fine. But if you step onto a set with a completely new team and you're like, hey, sorry, guys, I'm going to be speaking to myself a lot. And then you just keep going on and on about random stuff. And they just look at you like you're crazy because they're not used to working with YouTubers or people that film themselves for a living. And it's just this awkward situation of having to confront this social fear of working with people that you don't know and, and sounding crazy. And you're like, no, it's normal. I always say to the models at the beginning of the filming, I'm like, listen, I'm going to be saying a lot of random things about the cameras and other things that you probably don't care about. So if you don't think it's relevant to your posing, just ignore it because I'm just speaking to myself.
I think the weirdest part is when your team is native in one language and your YouTube channel is, for example, in English.
Yeah.
And everyone is just so awkward.
Yeah. I think in general, just working with new teams in new countries, I've been traveling a lot now. So I've been pretty much moving city month to month. So basically every single time I start something, I move on to the next thing. So I've been doing that a lot. And I think at this point, I'm just so accustomed to doing videos because I do it all the time. I just don't really care anymore. When you start doing YouTube and being on camera in general, you're just so much more self-aware of everything about you, about what you're doing, what you're saying. For example, I was saying to my friend the other day, I have a very weird accent because I have a lot of Polish accent because I've been in Poland since I was 14. And then I moved to Ireland. So I have this weird mix of this whatever accent it is. And for ages on my YouTube channel, I would say tree instead of three. Mm-hmm. And people would be commenting about it. They're like, oh, it's so funny how you say three. Ha ha. And it got into my head so much that then whenever I see three now, I make sure I say three and not tree. But it's small little things like that, that they just make you so hyper aware of yourself, like everything you, the way you look, the way you say things, the way you act. And I feel like down the line, because you do it so many times, pretty much almost maybe like twice a week or something, you just come to a point where you're like, you know what? People don't actually care if you do this thing or that thing, or, you know, a team of people, even if they think you're weird. So what? At the end of the day, you give them a video that they like. So I just feel like YouTube in a very large way is just getting over yourself and your own fears and your own perceptions of yourself. So
absolutely. And that was it from today's episode. But don't worry, Anita has so many insights from the industry that we will continue this episode next Wednesday. If you have enjoyed this one, maybe you want to leave us an honest review on Apple Podcasts because this is really going to help us to reach more people. And I just want to remind you that I'll be here on Friday answering your questions. So if you have one, don't hesitate to reach out to us. Me and George, the producer of the show, are waiting for you and your questions. Thank you so much for being with us today, guys, and I cannot wait to see you on Friday.